The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from KHUH LP 104.9 FM Seattle, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day, you turned on your radio, and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Back in the 1990s, a German bank called Deutsche Bank wanted to stick a tentacle into our great American money machine. Now, at that time, this meant that they needed to start providing loans to people that the already established American banks would rather not deal with. Which, at that time, happened to include Donald Trump. Now, since our president has always had a habit of not paying back his loans, he also has a habit of not paying his workers or his subcontractors, for that matter, especially the undocumented ones. But anyway, Deutsche Bank decided to step up to the plate and they started loaning money to Donald Trump. However, Deutsche Bank insisted upon certain guarantees. Now, usually, when he took out a loan, the rump would create some largely or wholly sham corporation and then use that corporation to actually acquire the loan so that rather than Donald Trump, the sham corporation would be the entity held responsible when the loan defaulted. Even though by that time, all the assets from the sham corporation had usually long ago been transferred into one of Donald Trump's personal accounts. Well, tough luck for creditors. The rump would probably call doing things like that smart. However, Deutsche Bank insisted upon including provisions wherein, rather than whatever sham corporation the rump had set up to be held responsible for the loan, the rump's own personal wealth would also be subject to seizure in case of default. Well, it appears that the rump currently owes Deutsche Bank over $300 million. And it appears that he is going to default on that loan. Bada boom. So this leaves Deutsche Bank with several choices, all of which are very incredibly bad. Do they seize Mar-a-Lago? Really? Can you imagine the tweets that would start emanating from the White House were they to try to do that? They're going to default on the same president that runs a government with the power to audit Deutsche Bank's books. However, if they don't ding our president for the money that he owes them, then that opens up several legal cans of worms concerning gifts to the president and or campaign finance laws and or just incredibly crappy optics in any case, no matter what they do. Maybe we should cry Deutsche Bank a river. Or maybe not. Since many people seem to have rusty irony detectors, I should probably point out that Deutsche Bank is actually one of the almost stereotypical criminal enterprises that simply masquerade as a bank. Yes, Deutsche Bank does do a lot of legitimate banking, and Deutsche Bank isn't quite as blatant or as outrageous as other more famous criminal banking enterprises, such as Nugent Hand or BCCI, for an example. But interestingly, in the context of Donald Trump, rather than laundering CIA drug money, Deutsche Bank instead mostly launders Russian mafia money. But Deutsche Bank is run exactly on the same idea as Nugent Hand and BCCI, and Deutsche Bank uses exactly the same methods to achieve their nefarious ends as those more famous examples did. The only reason to cry Deutsche Bank a river would be if we could wash them away with it. Ah, yes. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for February 7th, 2020. Let's start off this week's show by talking about insanity. If you don't think that cultural conditioning has a profound influence upon our worldviews, well, consider that even people who commit insanely outrageous acts that seem to be going completely off the charts and utterly rejecting their cultural conditioning, even people such as this tend to go off the rails.
Lately things just don't seem the same.
In a culturally prescribed manner.
Acting funny, and I don't know why.
In our culture, for instance.
Excuse me while I kiss the sky.
Someone who goes off the deep end is likely to pick up an assault weapon and go kill a bunch of innocent people. Whereas amongst the Algonquin tribes,
don't know if I'm going up or down.
Of Native Americans, people who went crazy would often develop a craving to consume human flesh.
Whatever it is, it's put a spell on me.
This phenomenon even has a name. It is called the Wendigo psychosis. Now, in some Inuit cultures, someone who slipped over the edge is likely go running naked across the snow fields. Now, Americans,
purple haze,
rarely
all in my eyes,
eat human flesh or run naked across snow fields. Whereas Algonquins rarely commit mass murder,
got me blowing,
or run naked across snow fields. Whereas Inuits,
is it tomorrow,
rarely commit mass murder,
or just the end of time,
or eat human flesh. So it seems to me that whatever methods are used in such conditioning, conscious or otherwise, could also be used to condition for good or desirable things.
Purple haze, all in my mind.
If it's gonna happen anyway,
is it tomorrow? Or just the end of time?
Then why not check it out? So I just listened to an interview with a journalist who claims that studies have proven that people are really lousy lie detectors. Actually, I already knew this. From endless anecdotal evidence I have been seeing for my entire life. And I also know this because I happen to be an exception to that rule, in that with notable exceptions, I can often tell when people are lying to me, and I have often noted most other people's seeming inabilities in this area. Evidently, there is survival value in trusting people, since so many people tend to do so. But the fact also remains that people's inability to detect lies also plays right into the hands of the fascists. However innocently, I'm not lying, believe me. Fortunately, there has been so much overwhelming evidence that has surfaced lately that by this point, nearly everyone understands that the government constantly lies to us nearly all the time. Indeed, this was one of the many reasons why the rump won the election. Like Barack Obama, the rump was able to fool a whole bunch of people into thinking that he was battling against the machine rather than being himself one of the most corrupted parts of the machine. He lied, in other words. The Republicans have always been on board with the imperialism machine. And then Barack Obama succeeded at pretty much single-handedly killing the anti-war movement on the left. And so now, rather than fighting the war machine, everyone is instead fighting each other on behalf of the war machine. And the talking mouths on the media machine play their role by pretending to be impartial commentators, even when the facts are all on one side. And thus, we are currently having a years-long debate about global climate change and fossil fuels' responsibility for that change, just as we had a decades-long debate about whether cigarettes cause cancer. even though the facts were hidden right in front of everyone's eyes for the entire time. And it's the same with this impeachment circus. The Rump has indeed committed a large number and a wide variety of impeachable offenses.
Jews was a leprechaun, full of trickery, but it went a bit too far.
And they made him an honor of me.
Jesus was a leprechaun, a twinkle in his eye, always smiling sweetly,
but I never expected to die.
And in spite of that indisputable fact, the Republicans simply deny that the Rump has committed any offenses. And so the media machine, in their pretended dedication to impartiality, simply repeat this lies as if they were credible arguments. To a large portion of the American populace, the truth has become whatever the Rump says it is. And the man is a pathological liar. Lots of people also tell lots of lies about money. And they even tell lies about games about money. So, I don't know how popular it is these days, but when I was a kid, everyone played the board game of Monopoly, which is a game about money. Kids, adults, and grandparents often spent hours together playing all day games. Even us druggy teenagers would often get totally blasted and then spend hours on a Monopoly board trying to win it all by any means necessary.
No, you can't.
The story behind the game was that Monopoly had been invented at the height of the Great Depression by a destitute and out-of-work salesman named Charles Darrow, who then went from rags to riches and became America's first board game millionaire. It was a great inspirational story that helped make Monopoly so popular in the 1930s. By the 1950s, everyone had been hearing that story all of their lives. And it turns out that story was totally full of crap. It turns out, in fact, that a radical feminist and socialist activist named Lizzie Maggie invented the original game at the turn of the century. And she did it as a way to indirectly attack people such as John D. Rockefeller and Andrew Carnegie without having to deal with incurring the infamous wrath of those two profanely rich and infamously wrathful men. So, Lizzie Maggie, that's M-A-G-I-E, invented her game to demonstrate the methods that capitalists and landlords used to fleece everyone else and to concentrate the wealth. She also invented an alternative form of the same game called Prosperity that was based upon more progressive rules. And where the point of the game was for everyone to help everyone else to prosper. Because when everyone prospers, then everyone prospers. So Ms. Maggie's game became popular amongst leftist elites. And at the time, her game spread up and down the East Coast and throughout the Midwest. Everyone from Quakers to college students started playing the game. Many of these people started making their own boards, and many people thus further contributed to the game's design and evolution from its inception in 1906 through the 1930s, when Parker Brothers began marketing Monopoly. Now that happenstance came about when a lady named Ruth Hoskins learned the game in Indianapolis and then took it to her home in Atlantic City, New Jersey, where she began making her own boards with street and railroad names from Atlantic City. Though Mrs. Hoskins misspelled Marvin Gardens, which is spelled M-A-R-V-E-N, as M-A-R-V-I-N. Mrs. Hoskins then taught her game to a bunch of Quakers, as well as to another friend of hers named Esther Darrow, who happened to be the wife of the aforementioned Charles Darrow. So Charles Darrow then wrote and asked the Hoskins for a set of written rules to their game, which Mrs. Hoskins thought rather strange, but she and her husband went to the trouble of writing down the rules and then sending them to Mr. Darrow. And after that, in what is an all too familiar story, Charles Darrow stole the game, lock, stock, and barrel, and sold it to Parker Brothers as his own invention. Mr. Darrow even misspelled Marvin Gardens, just as Mrs. Hoskins had done in her version of the game. And even though the Charles Darrow story was thoroughly debunked in the 1980s, Parker Brothers still stood behind their bullshite story on their website as late as 2012. And the only reason we know about all of this is because in 1983, a gentleman named Ralph Anspach, that's A-N-S-P-A-C-H, who won a trademark lawsuit in the U.S. Supreme Court. That was originally brought against him. By Parker Brothers. Parker Brothers sued Mr. Ansbach for using the word Monopoly in his own board game called Anti-Monopoly. Even though Mr. Ansbach's game bore very little resemblance to Monopoly in any way. It was Mr. Ansbach's research for his lawsuit that uncovered the true story of how the game of Monopoly came about. In addition, Mr. Ansbach became so annoyed by Parker Brothers during the course of this lawsuit that Mr. Ansbach now plans to start releasing a new game called Originalopoly, which is an exact replica of the original Monopoly game that was played by all those Quakers and socialists during the early 20th century. There are still some game boards left from the era. And unlike Anti-Monopoly, Originalopoly is actually very similar to the Parker Brothers version. But now Parker Brothers cannot sue Mr. Ansbach because they already sued Mr. Ansbach and he handed them their asses on a plate in the Supreme Court. Good on you, Ralph Ansbach. Sometimes there is justice in this world. And we're going to be back with another story featuring yet some more social justice right after a quick station break. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. Here we go again. Thanks partly to the profound effects that cultural conditioning produces upon the human psyche, there are lots of ways for influential people to manipulate public opinion. In the Ottoman Empire during the 16th century, for instance, Suleiman the Great evidently was not a big fan of veils on women. However, Suleiman had enough political acumen to understand that simply forbidding veils would likely ignite both political and religious shite storms. And so he made a move that may be indicative of why everyone always calls him Suleiman the Great. Suleiman ruled that all prostitutes must start wearing veils. And one of the effects of this ruling was that veils suddenly became far less popular amongst the elite ladies of the Ottoman Empire. And meanwhile, a couple of centuries later, over in Germany, Frederick the Great's wish was that, in addition to their traditional wheat crop, that Germans would also start growing potatoes as his people would then have two staples rather than just one, thus making them far less susceptible to famine. And therefore, evidently lacking the political acumen of Suleiman, Frederick simply ordered his farmers to start growing potatoes. Now, that would have gone over like a lead balloon if they had had balloons in the 18th century, lead or otherwise. But predictably, when simply ordered to start growing potatoes, the peasants found this to be an unacceptable government intrusion into their personal lives. And so they bitterly and even militantly resisted. Evidently, there are records from that time of people actually being executed for defending their right to not grow potatoes. The potato martyrs. As Howard Zinn noted, history does not really repeat itself, but it often does rhyme. Anyway, Frederick the Great then hit upon an idea that may be indicative of why everyone still calls him the Great, in spite of that political faux pas. Frederick thereafter forbade anyone from growing or eating potatoes except the royal family. And in addition, he very publicly and with great fanfare christened a new royal potato patch. And he expressly forbade commoners from trespassing in his royal potato patch. He even posted guards to assure that no one would steal the royal potatoes. So as Frederick evidently figured, the peasants evidently figured that anything worth guarding must be worth stealing. And so very soon thereafter, the royal potato patch was raided. Very likely as the guards were very consciously looking the other way. And soon after that, there developed a huge demand for black market potatoes. And soon after that, clandestine non-royal potato patches began springing up all over Germany. This day, Germans will leave potatoes on Frederick's grave. However, it should be noted that these same tricks of manipulation can also be used to achieve far more sinister ends than growing potatoes. many other historical figures have taken note of Frederick's example. The CIA, for instance, is currently using this exact same model to promote their drug trafficking activities. So it would seem that humanity does not only need to be wary of the temptation of forbidden fruits. Evidently, we also need to keep a close eye upon the temptation of forbidden tubers. And with that, it is time to get to work. All right. That's it for the news and commentary this week. For Fro and Hollow Earth listeners, I've got some music. Usually I avoid famous songs or, you know, songs that were on the charts and stuff. But I'm going to make an exception this week because this is some good stuff that hasn't been on the charts in a long time. This is Alice Cooper. Enjoy.
Middle-aged lady surprise. But I still did destroy her, and I will smash Halo World.
See, and I. did I do to deserve such a fate? I didn't really want to get involved in this thing. Someone handed me this gun and I gave it everything. Yeah, I gave it everything.
To this life, looked all around. I saw just what I liked and took what I found. Nothing came easy, nothing came free. Nothing came at all until they came after me. Yeah.
All right. That tune was called A Killer. And before that, we had The Halo of Flies. Both those tunes are from Alice Cooper. His album was called Killer, and I don't have it here with me, so I don't know what year it was released. That's it for the show this week. We'll see you next week. Peace. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com. And we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And please note that the Thunderbolt is on Facebook, where you can find links to the show and to the show notes. Or you can now go directly to the Thunderbolt WordPress site, which is at dana98501.wordpress.com.
Thank you very much.